Special Sauce is brought to you by Soyve. Unlock the awesome with marinades like Very Very Teriyaki and Hoisin Garlic.
Welcome to Special Sauce, Sirius Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
We make our own mozzarella, and we get our cheese curd from Meadowood Farms out of Cazenovia. I bring the sopressata up from Arthur Avenue. We make our own sausage from Lucky 7. We're like 90% New York State.
This week, we welcome my friend pitmaster and restaurateur John Stage, motorcyclist, ex-con, mini mogul, cookbook author, and now pizzeria owner. Wow, that's crazy. With the newly opened A Pizza Regionale in Syracuse. He founded the legendary Dinosaur Barbecue in the unlikely barbecue backwater of Syracuse, New York, and there are now 10 locations in cities including New York, Newark, Baltimore, and even Chicago. And also, he's the critic's critic because he has very strong feelings about restaurant critics. Anyway, John is one of the most generously spirited people I know. Welcome to Special Sauce, pitmaster and aspiring pie man, John Stage. It's so good to have you here, John.
Oh, it's great to be here, Ed.
I really want to know, you've had such an interesting life. You've done so many cool things. You've certainly had a non-linear career path. I always tell my wife that I've never deviated from my non-linear career path, and I believe that you're the same. So tell me about the Stage family table growing up.
Well, it was the perfect mix of a great Italian cook, which was my mother, and an Irish guy that did not like to eat. Like to drink a lot.
I see.
My poor mother was a little stifled in her what she could put on that table. But she loved to cook, and it was kind of a tale of two worlds of food in that house. It was always great, but the Italian stuff always really shone.
And where was this?
Well, we jumped around a little bit. I was born in Nyack, lived in West Havistraw, lived in Long Island, lived in Syracuse, and yeah, then, you know, I moved back to New York in 2002.
This was for your dad's work, or?
Let's see. He was a produce man at Grand. Remember the Grand Union Company?
Sure.
Yeah. He was. He got a job up in Syracuse. That's how we moved from downstate upstate.
What were your mom's favorite dishes for you growing up?
Oh, man. Pasta fazool was always Friday night. Thursday night was spaghetti meatballs. Lasagna was her. I'm still, like, ruined with anyone else's lasagna to this day. She was a very minimalistic, which I liked. It wasn't like a lot of times you get lasagna and it's overflowing with cheese and it's heavy, and hers was very light. So I've never found a lasagna I've enjoyed more. So she did a Neapolitan.
Neapolitan American
menu.
Yeah,
very much so. Very much so.
And your dad, would he take bites to go along with the drinks?
Well, you got to look at they always looked at it as a base.
I see.
You know, I always thought, you know, my mother taught me how to cook. My father taught me how to drink and fight. That was basically the mix of that.
And so was there fighting at the table, and was he fighting with you and your mom?
Oh, there was fights everywhere. Everyone's yelling and screaming. It was very funny.
So tell us about how you got into food and cooking in general.
Well, I always was peeking around, what my mother was doing, and I always did appreciate a nice plate of food growing up. And growing up, it was always drilled into you from that generation that you had food on that table, you were very lucky to have food on that table, and you, when you did, you just appreciated it. So I always had a very
keen appreciation.
Keen appreciation. When you had steak, you knew you were having steak. You know, you were told how fortunate you were for having steak. So it was almost like that meat thing was so important growing up. When you did have it, you were like, yeah. So growing up, very much so. And then I really didn't get into the restaurant business until I started Dinosaur Barbecue, which was 1983. But, you know, we had talked about, introduced me in the ex-con world. I did work in the prison mess hall
And that's so when you ran afoul of the law, that was your gig.
Yeah. So when I was 18 years old, I spent 3 years in the can, and part of my program was working in the prison mess hall. So I loved the – I actually looked forward to going to work. My job was taking the eggs, powdered eggs, mixing them, and then getting up on line and slapping, you know, 1,500 inmates coming through. I loved the action of feeding people. And
so barbecue was the new black.
Yeah, I guess you could say. But this wasn't barbecue back then.
Right.
This was
– So you were in the kitchen. You were in the mess hall.
Right.
Making powdered eggs,
yep.
And you enjoyed it. You enjoyed
enjoy
your
it.
Gig in the joint.
I did. I looked forward to it, and then I got promoted into the officers' mess hall, and that's where, the better food was, and you really appreciated, you know, the better food at that point. So when I got out, I had got infected with the food bug. Like, I knew I wanted to do that, but I had no idea, so I got out and I was...
And it didn't come from your father's being a produce man
or
anything.
No, not at all.
You were trying to get probably far away from...
Yeah, that wasn't even an option. It was... I just enjoyed the action.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It was the action of feeding people.
The action up the river. You were like... It was the prison version of the CIA.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. And then I got out and I just worked construction. I was a roofer, concrete guy, bricklayer. Terrible at all of it.
You were a bad bricklayer?
Oh, man, I think they wanted to pay me to stay away, these guys. So I had to find my own thing, you know. And then I went to work. I took a job as an assistant manager in a sub shop. And I loved it.
Absolutely. Upstate?
Upstate, up in Syracuse. And absolutely loved it. And then, but I knew that wasn't for me. And I had to do my own thing because I've never really worked for, I've never been good working for other people. So
oh,
I know I had
me
to,
too, man.
Yeah.
It's rough. If you're wired that way, it's both liberating and problematic at the same time.
Very much so. Yeah, there's a lot of, there's no perfect world in anything. That's for sure. And that's how I started early.
And you are really into motorcycles. And you told me, I think at one point when you would go on cycle trips with your buddies, mm-hmm. that you were cooking on the roadside.
I got out of the joint in March of 81. I got my first Harley May of 81. So towards the end of my bed, I hung out, I was with the Italians and then I with the bikers. And this whole biker thing was like freedom and open road. And when you're in the joint, this sounds all very romantic.
Sure. And it's open.
And it's open.
That's the key. It's an open road as opposed to a closed cell.
Yeah. And that's what really propelled me to get a motorcycle. So I got out and I knew I wanted to get a motorcycle. I never rode a motorcycle in my life.
Really?
I got a Harley before I knew how to ride a motorcycle. And then once I started riding and, riding a Harley back in those days were a little bit different. It's not the, you don't see your lawyer and your doctor on a Harley.
Right. It wasn't a status symbol.
No, it was pretty outlaw shit back then. And, as I started going to these different events where there are club functions, tattoo shows, swap meets, I noticed the food sucked at all of them. It was terrible. There was back then the volunteers of whatever organization were putting it on were the people cooking your food. And then these guys were high, they were drunk, they were carrying on and doing everything but caring about the food.
Got it.
And I remember looking at this going, damn, we should get in the business of feeding bikers. And this is with my two buddies at the time. We sobered up the next morning and we said, yeah, that's still a good idea.
Sober is the key.
Yeah, sober is the key. But unfortunately, we had about $20 between us at that point.
It's really hard to open a restaurant for $20.
Well, but it's not hard. At that point, 1983, in the biker world, there was no health department. There was no tax man. There was no regulations. There was no nothing. The shit was wide open. So we cut a 55-gallon drum in half, and I went to the organizers. I said, hey, man, let me do your food, and I'll kick you back 10%. And they were more than happy to give up that food concession because they lost money on that.
Right, because they didn't know what they were doing.
Yep. And at that point, Dinosaur Productions was born. And we literally took a welder friend of ours and took a 55-gallon drum. Dino had a pickup truck that was my partner, and we just loaded shit in and set up.
Is that why you called it Dinosaur? Because Dino?
Very much so. Yeah.
Dino was, if everyone remembers, was the pet on the Flintstones.
Yeah, but this guy, not so much.
He was, he was nobody's pet?
No, Dean was a bad man. A good man. And he's still my head of security in Syracuse.
But you don't mess with Dino.
You know, he's 70-something years old right now. Still
and
fast.
You wouldn't take him on at 25.
Oh, hell no. Dino was a tough dude. But he was 350 pounds. I was riding an old panhead motorcycle. He was riding a flathead. We're cooking over open fire. We said, man, we're like dinosaurs. We're like the dinosaurs of the food world. And that's how dinosaur barbecue
Got
came
it.
In. Has nothing to do with dinosaurs. Like, I've never put a Tyrannosaurus Rex rib or burger on the menu. There's been nothing to do with dinosaurs.
It has to do with your place in the time-space continuum.
Yes.
How about that?
I like that. And that's what we did. So now we started traveling up and down the East Coast, hitting, you know, you name it, where there was bikers gathering. We were showing up and cooking food. Sometimes we hit, sometimes we miss, but we always had a good time.
You were the first biker catering company ever.
I'm going to say that I know of. Okay, maybe something on the West Coast. You know, in my little East Coast world, I would say definitely. And then I got into the fair business. So I was like kind of like a carny for like 5 years,
right.
83 to 88.
So you'd bring your equipment to state fairs, county fairs.
Yeah, but now we took an old Arnold bread truck and turned it into a food truck.
And this was before food truck madness.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We were, again, one of the first.
You were a pioneer.
we were definitely, I'm sure there's other people out there, but from the biker food truck world, this was, I didn't know of anybody else at this point. So, yeah, and that's what we did. Now we made a little more dough, and then we bought a trailer. And then we started doing some of the bigger fairs in the country.
And how did you learn to make barbecue?
As I started crossing the Mason-Dixon line. All right, so we called ourselves, we went from Dinosaur Productions to Dinosaur Concessions to Dinosaur Barbecue because I got the bright idea, everyone else is putting a marinara sauce on the sausage sandwiches. Let's do a barbecue sauce, just as a point of differentiation.
So you would grill the sausages and put a barbecue sauce on it.
Our thing was sausage, peppers, and onions, Italian sausage, peppers, and onions, and a Delmonico ribeye steak sandwich that we grilled and the sausage. So I developed a barbecue sauce. We called ourselves, now we changed the name, Dinosaur Barbecue. And now we start heading down south. People are looking at us going, what the hell is this? This is Italian sausage. This is not barbecue. And I had no idea what these people were talking about. And then this one, I'll never forget this. We're in Hagerstown, Maryland. One of the first, before we actually made our way south, this guy comes up and goes, man, this ain't barbecue. I don't know why you guys are calling yourself barbecue. Barbecue is about holes in the ground. And he started going in this whole hole in the ground shit. And I had no idea what he was talking about. So now we started creeping in. And then I started tasting a little bit of what barbecue was. Then I got on my bike the next season early and rode to Memphis. And that road trip changed everything for me.
Really?
Yeah, it really did. So I went through northern Mississippi. I went through parts of Alabama, and I started. But Memphis, to me, was the Shangri-La.
Yes, and it still is one of the barbecue capitals country.
But when I made it to Memphis, I was like, yes, now this is it. And I just hit every
It was
barbecue.
Mecca.
It was Mecca to me. And I came back. I said, we're changing everything. We've got to learn about this smoked meat. I've tasted this stuff, and it's fucking awesome. So we have to change everything. So now we got into the barbecue world. But now this is around 87 now, 86, 87. And now we decided to open up a restaurant. So that's when the barbecue went, just started. And I went through like 20 different pits before, you know. And then I can't even imagine what that barbecue was like when we first started.
Yeah, so you're thinking it wasn't the highest quality barbecue.
You know what? I don't even know if it was really barbecue. But we were
But you
there.
Called it barbecue.
We called it barbecue.
What did your mom think of your move away from spaghetti and meatballs?
Well, at this point, I don't think she really had too much of an opinion.
She didn't have too much say in the matter?
Yeah, poor thing. No, she didn't.
So it was really by trial and error.
Definitely.
And it was, you know, you'd meet somebody or you'd go to a barbecue joint and you'd pick their brain if they would allow you to.
Because if you think about that time and you know, we talk about the 80s, as like it's almost like an ancient history now, because there was no internet. There was nobody had cookbooks out. Nobody had internet. There was no
and barbecue food wasn't network. A thing.
No, it wasn't. So people, you only could get your knowledge by talking to other people.
It's an oral tradition.
It really was. And I was so immersed in it at this point, and I just could not get enough of it. So it just became trial and error, trial and error. And then I'm going to say when I really started getting it a little bit. All right, so the restaurant opened up in 88.
In Syracuse?
In Syracuse.
Why Syracuse?
Syracuse is where I was basing myself out of, you know, where my son was born. And, you know, so that was the other thing, getting off the road. My kid was born in 84, and he was like a gypsy on the road with me.
He had to go to school.
Until he had to go to school, yeah. So he, I had to settle down that lifestyle. It was just too, it wasn't healthy for anybody. So it really wasn't. So now, first 2 years, and it's good. But actually, we were, you know, we had a London broil that we were broiling and slicing with barbecue sauce. And then our ribs, I think they were serviceable at that time.
That's not high praise.
No, but that's true.
You're calling your own ribs serviceable.
And in 1990, I'm going to say, yeah, I probably wouldn't recognize those ribs right now. And then the pork, we would slice it. And then really 1991, I started bottling my barbecue sauce. So I would go to, I would fly into Memphis, drive up to Blytheville, Arkansas, and go to a place called Razorback Cookers in Blytheville, Arkansas, Ray Red Gill. And at that point, those guys mentored me much more on what real barbecue was. That was I owe a lot to those guys because they really – now I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, now I'm getting
So you began to understand smoke and time and
yes,
all those things.
Very much so. Very
and
much
indirect
so.
Cooking and
– yep. And there's Ray Red Gill was Bill Clinton's barbecue caterer.
Really?
Me and Bill Clinton were both named honorary members of the Razorback cooking team. And when I did meet – and I used to cater for Bill Clinton a lot back when – towards the end of his presidency. And when I first met him, I said, hey, you know, me and you got something in common. We're both – honorary members of the Ray. He goes, Ray Red Gill. We sat there and talked barbecue for about
of course.
A half hour with this
I've
guy.
Only met Bill Clinton once, the most charming charismatic
bastard.
Person
wow.
in the history of the world.
Yep. And now I was at this, we were doing this catering, and I'm looking, it's like, it was like a mini White House set up, and we're just sitting there talking barbecue. I was like, this is absolutely awesome. And then he would fly into Syracuse. We'd run ribs up to his plane to Air Force One. It was good. He was a good dude.
That's great.
Yeah.
When I met him, I talked to him about Doe's Eating Place because you know, that's in Little Rock and it's a famous place for steaks and tamales. So it was really fun.
The man loves food.
Yeah, he does.
Or he did. I don't know.
And he makes you feel so special when he's talking to you.
Yes.
You'd follow him anywhere.
Yep, that's true.
So what appeals to you about barbecue?
Oh, many, many different things. It's taking like a rough, tough piece of meat and turning it into something beautiful. That, at its essence, is barbecue to me. And it's just – it's communal. It's primal. It's
social.
And there's no social economic boundaries with barbecue. You know, it appeals to everybody.
Right. It crosses ethnic lines.
It does.
And socioeconomic lines.
Yes, very much so. And that's probably the spirit of that is what I love most about barbecue. And when it's good and great, when it's great, there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
It really isn't when it's great.
It's sort of in one way, it's the sort of purest form of democracy we have,
mm-hmm.
you know, still.
You know, very much, I guess it is. It really is. And there's only four ingredients, really. Smoke, spice, meat. Well, it's really three ingredients.
Right, and then sauce, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So why has barbecue become a thing, not just in the traditional regions you found mm-hmm. it in the South, in cities like Kansas City and Chicago and mm-hmm. Memphis, but just all over now? The barbecue culture has exploded and mm-hmm. interest in the barbecue culture. What do you think that's all about?
Well, barbecue, the equipment has made life easier now. So when I first started, you know, we were in the, you know, in the tanks, and you had to stay up all night, and yeah, there was a real dedication to it.
And that's when the drinking and the storytelling would take hold.
Exactly. Then, you know, I'm going to – and they've been around for a while, but really up north is your you know, we use the Oilers out of Mesquite, Texas, which is just straight wood, really as old school as you can get with modern technology of a rotisserie. Then you got your old hickories and your Southern Prides with gas. It makes it easier to cook, and it kind of cracked the code a little bit. And the price of time and dedication
came down.
Came down, exactly. And corresponding with the Food Network, with the internet. These things have really is what fueled, because it was a very regional Southern thing, and it's awesome. So it was like anything else, that's great, and it gets more accessible.
Yes.
Now it's
going to spread. Viral.
It
barbecue
goes viral.
Barbecue has gone viral.
It really has. It really has.
And what do you make? I mean, you go to the Big Apple Barbecue mm-hmm. block party, mm-hmm. and I was on the advisory board, mm-hmm. so I played a very small role in mm-hmm. the development of that, and it's become a big thing with 100,000 people going a day. Mm-hmm. And the pitmasters are treated like rock stars. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that?
You don't really make too much of it, because if you let things like that get to your head, you know, it's ridiculous. We're just happy, A, to be – and again, I'm different. I'm coming from Harlem.
Right.
I've only got 20 let's say 100 blocks to travel. These poor guys are lugging their pits and their rigs from Tennessee, Texas.
1,000 miles, 2,000 miles
right.
sometimes.
They need more pampering.
More adulation.
More adulation, because they are traveling. And I mean, I could tell you horror stories of some of these guys who've lost pits, broke rods, just the breakdowns on the side of the road, pulling these huge rigs. It's not easy. And then you got to come into New York with it. So if they treated them like shit, who the hell would want to do that?
That's true. That's true. That's a pretty basic point.
So all our – you know, the pit guys, we all just enjoy seeing each other. We love cooking. It's a party for us. And this year was particularly a lot of fun.
Yeah.
This was a great year.
You're right. I think that they get a huge kick out of it, mm-hmm. but it still doesn't make it any less – of a working person's craft.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's as blue collar as it gets.
And right. It's like rock stars may have people lugging their equipment around, mm-hmm. and then all they do is plug in on stage, and
right.
everybody else is doing the insanely hard work. Not that they're not working to become great
right.
musicians, but barbecue guys like pitmasters, you're just used to rolling up your sleeves and doing whatever needs to be done. There are no equivalent of roadies.
No, roustabouts are guys that, you know, at this stage now I'll have my guys set up, and then I'll come in and I'll prep the meat with them. We'll cook, and my guys will spend the night next to it, and I'll go home to bed. Then I come back and do it. So a little bit of both, but I'm in there, man. I'm in there. And that to me, you know, we talked a little bit off camera of what makes us happy. That still makes me happy, you know, pulling out a good brisket or a good rack of meat and someone coming up and going, damn, that's good barbecue. That still to me is what motivates
you. Sure. So let's talk about barbecue and race. Mm-hmm. You know, barbecue, like jazz, is an African-American derived art or mm-hmm. certainly a craft. Mm-hmm. Do you find there's tension involving African-American pitmasters and white pitmasters? Do you find that there's generally common ground that can be found? Because there's definitely two schools, right? When you go to the block party, you know,
yeah.
some of the pitmasters are black and some of them are white.
Man, right? I don't see any tension. I just see regional cooking differences, like both Ed Mitchell and Rodney. I didn't see Rodney this year.
Ed Mitchell and Rodney Scott are two of the African American pitmasters who come to the
yeah,
Big Apple Barbecue
Rodney's
Block
badass,
Party.
Rodney's man. And Ed's old school North Carolina. They're both Carolina guys. So they do the whole hog, and
In different ways.
Different ways. So I'm just trying to think. No, I don't see any tension. Not with those dudes anyway.
Yeah. I think it probably more has to do with how it's written about, you know, than the, you know, which gets us to critics.
Right.
And I know you famously told me about some of the issues that you confronted when you had the temerity to open a dinosaur barbecue location in West Harlem.
Temerity, I like that word. Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, it was you know, back in early 2000. It's kind of the same thing Danny Meyer went with when he opened up Blue Smoke. It was, you know, we both got – well, actually, like from our point of view, half the people liked us. The Post, the Daily News loved us. The Times hated us. Someone else liked us. So this one guy basically said that we were not cooking with smoke because you can't cook with smoke in New York and blah, blah, blah. And took the picture in front of the restaurant, in front of our wood pile. I was like, holy shit, I'm dying here. You know, so it was like some of it was just so ridiculous.
And so just wrongheaded.
And just wrongheaded. And, you know, I'm over that now. It's just a different world. But back then it pissed me off.
It pissed me off. It pissed you off so much. You showed me, I don't know if you still have that tattoo.
Oh, okay. This is funny. We got killed. The Times killed us. God, this is when we first opened. Let's call it 2003. And my Cooter, my ex, my brother Cooter, who's passed. But me and him were sitting at the bar. We're just tossing back some bourbons. We're like, fuck. You know, we're like pissed off. And he looks at me and goes, fuck the critics. I was like, yeah, fuck the critics. FTC. He goes, yeah, fuck that. I said, we ought to get that tattooed. And so, again, we saw him next day, sobered up the next morning. We both went down to the tattoo shop and got FTC tattooed on us. But you know what? It made us feel better. And we were like, you know what? Fuck them. Let's just cook. Let's just do
F the critics.
Right. Let's just do what we do. And then things turned around. But it was like a psychological thing because we were just so down and beat up. And,
right. I remember you told me that the guy actually – he played detective. He played barbecue detective because he wanted to see if you were actually using wood because he didn't believe it was legal.
Right, right. So it was, I can go on and on. And don't get my blood pressure up, please. I'm trying to enjoy myself here.
So pitmasters are typically idiosyncratic folks, to say the least.
Definitely.
They are not cast from a typical mold. They love, as far as I can tell, to drink and talk and spend all night cooking animal flesh and telling stories.
Mm-hmm. They're all oddballs in their own way. We're all oddballs our own way.
Yeah, you've met the enemy, and it is you.
But you know what? Good dudes, man. Good people. Good people. There's really pit guys that I meet that I ever say, wow, what an asshole. They're out there, but I just don't associate with them. But the strain is good dudes, and we will do anything for us for each other.
Right. Like, I've noticed there's an incredible generosity of spirit among pitmasters.
Yeah, my buddy Pat Martin, he's opening up a new joint in
Nashville.
In Nashville.
And Pat Martin was actually a seminal figure in Nashville barbecue.
Oh, definitely, definitely. But Pat's opening up a huge restaurant in Nashville, and maybe have opened just 2 days ago. So at the block party, he said, man, you've opened a lot of big restaurants. Would you mind taking a look at it? Like, fuck yeah, man. So I went down there and we spent 2 or 3 days and I helped him. If I needed Pat's help, I know Pat would
come up here in a second.
So yeah, and these bonds are all formed and, you know, talking meat.
Talking
drinking,
everything.
Talking shit, drinking, carrying on. And again, good dudes is really, I would do, like you take all those guys at a block party. I would, if they needed me, I'm there for them. If I need them, they're there for me. And I know that. And that really, I guess, sums up the spirit of
it seems to me that you could say, given your movement from motorcycles to cooking, that you move from hogs to hogs. I don't know. I was just,
you're reaching
on that. It's a reach. But just, you know, give me an obligatory chuckle.
There you go.
All right. That's good. What three pit masters do you particularly admire? Could be anywhere.
Let's see. Well, Pat Martin, I love what he does with
I do, too. Whenever I go to the block party, he knows that I want a sandwich of just belly meat.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the spaghetti. Yeah, that's just pork that's been cooking in its own fat
for 12 hours.
It's like pork confit.
Yeah, that's the money shot. Actually, Pat's helped me with whole hog because I never did whole hog up to about 4 years ago. And he actually advised me on whole hog. So Pat definitely – oh, shit. I can't talk about Pitmas out Mike Mills. I mean, that dude.
17th Street Barbecue, yeah, Murfreesboro, Illinois. Sort of in many ways a grandfather figure to all of you.
You know, no doubt. No doubt. We always – we call him the legend. That's his nickname. So when we speak of Mike, it's usually the legend or – you know, and him and Amy are fantastic. I love them
his
both.
Daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, nobody can talk smack like Mike Mills.
No, Mike – when Mike talks, you listen. It's like the E.F. Hutton of barbecue.
Right.
Let's see. Who else out there? Man, there's so many. I love what Rodney does.
Rodney Scott comes from a small town in South Carolina. His restaurant is hardly a restaurant. Mm. It is a shack.
Yeah.
And what he does is truly amazing. He's a young guy. He's observing South Carolina barbecue traditions and doing something that really nobody else is doing.
Yeah, he's badass. Oh, my God. Then you got the Texas guys with brisket, you know, like Aaron Franklin with brisket. They're still doing it the old school.
Right. I was just down. I just had some Franklin's, you know, eating Franklin's brisket is like seeing God.
It's good. It's good.
There are very few women pitmasters that I've seen, mm-hmm. or am I just missing them?
Let's see. The girl Leanne out of Chicago, Leanne Whipple. Not many. Well, put it in a ratio, not many.
Right.
But I think there's a couple, three out there. And I think, again, with the Food Network, for a woman pitmaster to come up, she can make her bones real quick if she's good and, you know, because there's a lot of attention
right,
towards that.
Right, sure.
But they're out there, but not anywhere near what it is.
Right.
It's still a very male.
Male dominated.
Yeah.
So now it's time for this special sauce, all-you-can-answer buffet. We call it the tortoise round rather than the lightning round because you can take your time. What's in your desert island fridge? You know, it has electricity. You know, you've got everything you need.
Oh, man, there's got to be pasta in there.
Okay.
There's got to be some pork.
Is it ribs? Is it shoulder? Is it a whole hog?
Well, you know what? I'm going to say depends on what my cooking equipment is on that desert island.
Right.
You know,
well, you have whatever you need.
Yeah. Definitely got to be some pasta. There's got to be some. There's got to be some tomatoes. Desert island. So now you're implying that there's going to be very little food.
Yeah, except what's in your fridge.
It's okay. It's just right
so
there.
So, you know, it's one pack.
Oh, man. It's got to be eggs. It's got to have a little pork in there. There's got to be some pasta. There's got to be salt and pepper.
Right.
I mean, without that, everything's dead.
You're not mentioning vegetables, dude.
Oh, no. I eat more vegetables now. In this desert, I don't think, man. I don't know. Who you growing vegetables? What's going on in this desert island?
You know, we could airlift them in, you know.
Okay, so it's an island
We're locavores. They could be grown locally on the island.
All right, so I got to think differently now. We have amenities on this island.
Yes.
Oh, we have options
to. We have options.
Okay, all right, good. Then definitely.
This is a fantasy desert island.
I used to eat so much meat and very little vegetables. I still eat meat. I just don't eat as much meat as I used to.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And I bet when you were on the road on your Harley, you weren't eating a lot of vegetables.
No. There's not really.
Actually, you can't think of one, can you?
And I'm 56 years old. My body and my metabolism is changing.
Right.
And I want to stay in shape. And the combination now has changed somewhat. So I'm trying to adjust to the I still weigh the same, but things going in different directions.
Sure, I hear you, bro. I hear you. So who's at your last supper? Mm-hmm. No family allowed. So I know you love your son dearly.
No family allowed.
No family allowed. Because everyone just started giving us their family, and then it got boring.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it'd probably be a lot of fun is Sinatra.
You're the first person who's mentioned the chairman of the board.
You know, I'm going to go right now. Just that was top of my head. Like, who would be a great time? I'm not trying to get esoteric or deep right now. I'm just looking for a good time. It's my last meal.
Exactly.
That could be That could be a lot of fun.
All right. So who else is in your Rat Pack? You got Frank. Yeah. That helps.
Yeah, man. That'd be good. Let's see.
Could be anybody, living, dead, politicians, cooks, writers.
I've never met Bruce Springsteen. I'd probably get a kick out of that.
All right. Maybe could we get Bruce and Frank to do a duet?
No, how great would that be?
How awesome would that be?
Who else? I don't know, man. There's so many people.
Two more people.
Oh, we got to get a – how about – Oh, man, how about a nice Sophie Loren, a young Sophie Loren?
Okay, so now I have to be there because it's Sophie Loren, Bruce Springsteen, John Stage, and Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, we have to get one more woman here to make this a party. No family. Let me see.
Right.
Let's see, I'm going back old stuff, man. Maybe Joey Heatherton or Angie Dickinson back in the prime.
You're really showing your age, man.
I'm doing this as an old school.
I mean, some people would say Amy Schumer. You say Joey Heatherton and Angie Dickinson.
No, I'm just going like I'm going on like the Rat Pack. I just read this book, so I'm
okay.
I'm going on like an old and you can't tell me Angie Dickinson wasn't smoking hot.
She was
in her day.
She was.
So I'm going back all in the day stuff.
It's true. You should feel good that some of our guests reach back to Helen of Troy.
Oh, see, I'm not that'd be interesting, but I'm looking for a good time at the end of the night. And I got in my new pizza place. Why Sophie Loren's on my mind.
Right.
So we've got this little homage to her of all these different shots of her making pizza and eating pizza. And she looks so hospitable and she looks so into the food and into – I've dedicated a wall to that because
that's
I just
awesome.
Like how her face looks as she's pouring wine or how she's making pizza.
You know, I have to interrupt our buffet because I forgot to ask you about the pizza. You know, you have all these barbecue joints. Mm-hmm. Then you decide you're going to open up a pizza joint in Syracuse. Mm-hmm. What the hell?
Okay, I'll tell you exactly how this came about. I wasn't planning on it. I'm going on a cross-country motorcycle ride, not this past summer, the summer before. And I'm in Syracuse, but I'm heading back to New York. That's where I left from. There was a bakery across the street from the Dinosaur, and the owner sold it. The new guy came up to me and goes, hey, before I put this on the market, do you want to do anything with this? I was like, oh, man, what am I going to do with this? I don't know. He goes, do me a favor. Just come over, take a look at it, and tell me what I should do. I was like, all right. So I walk in. I was like, boy, a wood-fired pizza place would be really good here. But I'm saying this to myself, walk out. I'm like, all right, thank you. I go across the street, and my bar manager who's been with me for the last 12 years goes, what were you doing over there? I was like, just checking out the space. He goes, you know what would go really good there? A Neapolitan wood, a wood pizza oven. I was like, holy shit, sit down. Let's talk about this. So I said, if you're serious, I'm serious. This is all going on in the span of like 12 minutes. He goes, no, it's my life dream, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he'd been with me for 12 years, but I know he's had some entrepreneurial. I was like, if you want to do this, I'll negotiate this from the road. And what was so attractive is the rent, you know, being so used to New York City rent and then doing a new deal in Syracuse, I was like, wow, these rents are so awesome.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm just going to move all my joints here.
So I negotiated from the road. And then in that 45 to 60 days I was out there, I kind of formulated the concept in my head. And then we started thinking about, you know, how people cook in Italy and how regions of Italy don't look at other regions as Italian food. And like if you're in Rome, they look different at Neapolitan cooking and everyone cooks from their region. So that's what I was like, wow, we got to – and this is like upstate New York is kind of like the breadbasket. There's so much great stuff up there right now. So we said we're going to view New York State as the region and call it a Pizza Regionale. And then what happened from that is we found a stone ground mill in outside of Ithaca in Trumansburg. So when we order our flour, they grind it.
They grind your flour
to order? They grind our flour. We place our order, it gets ground. We make our own mozzarella and we get our cheese curd from Meadowood Farms out of Cazenovia. I bring the soppressata up from Arthur Avenue. We make our own sausage from Lucky Seven, all their meats outside the Tug Hill. So right now, going into this time of the year, we are almost sans our tomatoes from California, and we get our olive oil from California. We're like 90% New York State ingredients right now.
But I'm really annoyed now because you didn't bring any pizza here.
Well, you know what? We're going to be opening up in Gotham Food Hall.
In Brooklyn. You are?
Yeah.
The one on 45th and...
No. There's a new one in Brooklyn.
Oh, cool.
In Brooklyn Academy of Music. So me and my son are doing a food hall.
That's there. Great. So what's the menu at your Last Supper?
The menu. Okay. Well, there's some barbecue has got to be represented. My mother's lasagna, definitely.
Okay.
I eat more chicken than I probably eat anything, so a beautiful roasted bird and a plethora of vegetables.
I was about
seasonal
to
vegetables.
Say, you know, I mean, in your newly found healthy state, if you weren't going to mention something green, no dessert?
You know what? I could care less about dessert, to be
all
honest
right.
with you. It's not my thing.
Barbecue is dessert to some people.
Yeah, I eat dessert, but you know what I've learned? And again, getting older, I eat and I'm feeling good, and then I eat dessert. And I feel like shit.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Maybe
no,
it's
I know what you mean. I've sort of lost my taste. I can do with just one spoonful.
Yes, that's me. I want somebody else to order dessert so I can swoop
in
and get a taste.
That's what I do. I make my wife order dessert.
Yeah.
So what's your guilty pleasure? Do you have a guilty pleasure?
I don't really feel guilty about anything, to be honest with you. You know that I do. No, there's no guilty pleasure. You know, it's all good.
Given the fullness of your life, I think that's an appropriate answer. Have you learned to know when to say when in terms of do you imbibe far less than you used to? I guess you have to as you get
older.
You
mean alcohol?
Yeah.
What is a lot? Let's see. I'm a little more cognizant of what I have to do the next day.
Got it.
You know what it is? I can't drink the beer like I used to. I used to be able to kill some beer.
You pound beer.
I can't anymore. Two beers and I'm full.
Got
it. So then
I got
to make a move to something else that becomes food appropriate. No, I behave myself a hell of a lot more than I used to.
I know you do. Yeah. I've seen you, man. So what do you cook when there's nothing in the house to eat?
It goes straight a quick pasta.
Really?
A pasta, 20 minutes. By the time that water's boiled and that pasta's done, it's a beautiful.
And then just add olive oil, salt, and pepper, or?
Well, when you say nothing. So,
yeah.
If I got some, I just call it like what's in my refrigerator pasta. And that's what I put together.
Okay.
And it's quick, it's fast, it's delicious, and I'm done in 20 minutes.
And you're never sick of that?
Never get sick of that.
Got it.
No.
Well, I mean... I don't know what else there is to say, but thank you so much for sharing your special sauce with us, John Stage. It's been a pleasure getting to know you all these years and now getting to sit down and talk to you in special sauce. Visit a dinosaur barbecue in one of his 10 locations. I personally love the wings and the ribs,
nice.
The St. Louis-style ribs. Visit the pizzeria, which I have not been. And,
well, I want you to hit this pizzeria.
Yeah.
I got your pizza book from years ago.
Oh, and he wants to know what you think about his pizza, right?
Because
that's the way you're going to learn.
Of course.
Check out the book, Dinosaur Barbecue, Roadhouse.
Yeah, it's
book.
A moldy oldie, man.
Yeah.
That's from the 2000s.
And if you do get close enough to him, ask him to show you his FTC tattoo. So we'll see you next time on Special Sauce. So long, John. So long, Serious Eaters. Thanks for sharing your special sauce with
us,
John.
Thanks for having me, Ed. Appreciate it.